When you send me packing down Green River Valley, I knew that if you couldn't, then no one would have me. Lost myself drinking with those stray dogs in the alleys till the whiskey sold my bones.
Hey, this is Adam with Mile High Stash, the podcast that asks what five albums you would take to a remote Colorado cabin in the event of a zombie apocalypse. Armed only with food, water, and a crank-powered Victrola, we are in the throes of summer in Colorado right now. The throes. It's hot and dry, and, well, my favorite things right now are biking up in the mountains, you know, Jamestown and all that, in order to get much cooler, and paddleboarding near my house, and playing softball. I could play ball in any season and forget what the weather is. Last night I went to Murder by Death at the Ogden in Denver, and yeah, I have a Murder by Death tattoo, and right now I'm drinking coffee out of my Murder by Death mug that I was gifted at the Stanley Hotel after my seventh year seeing Murder by Death at the Stanley. So I'm kind of a fan. I'm also a huge fan of Alicia Sweeney, big time DJ at Indy 102.3 in Denver, formerly known as Open Air. Alicia interviewed Gasoline Lollipops when I was the drummer, and we played a studio session after our first full-length album came out, and that's on YouTube. And Alicia and I have been friends ever since. She is our guest today on Mile High Stash, and we're lucky to have her. I'm also lucky that the Boulder Roots Music Project asked me to come by on Monday, July 8th, which is around the bend here, to give a free talk about DIY music promotion and booking and management. That'll be at 7 p.m. on Monday, July 8th at the Roots Music Project, and you can get more info at rootsmusicproject.org. You know, if you are in a band or you're, you know, singer-songwriter and you don't have any help, you know, from a booking agent or management company or label, and you want to know how to do it yourself, you know, because you have to, that is something that I have a lot of experience with, in bands and also, in the media. And I'm going to talk about it and field questions. I think that'll be really fun. All right, here is my chat with the wonderful Alicia Sweeney of Denver's Indy 102.3. Oh, and thanks to Lance at the Dab Dispensary in Denver for supplying great weed and edibles and even dabs to Mile High Stash guests. Personally, I love the all CBD edibles because I work a lot and sometimes I have a hard time falling asleep. And the CBDs from the Dab not only help with that, but I wake up feeling amazing. So yeah, thanks to the Dab. All right, I'll see you on the other side. Alicia Sweeney, where are you originally from so that everybody knows that? I remember you telling me this a long time ago.
I was born in North Platte, Nebraska.
Okay, I was going to say Iowa, but I was sort of close.
Only lived there for a couple years.
Yeah.
My parents were both born in Nebraska, and they were hippies, so they were not well received in Nebraska. My parents owned an arcade and record shop before I was born.
Wow.
And so by the time I came along and my parents had me and my three siblings, I'm the youngest of four, our house was filled with albums. Whoa. Our house was filled with arcade games and pinball machines. We had everything from Asteroids to Dolly Parton pinball in our house because my parents' record shop was eventually run down and closed by the police because it was a place where maybe people not only bought records, but maybe liked to smoke marijuana.
Yeah.
And doing that in small town Nebraska was not a favored thing.
So is this how you got super into music? Just having albums around?
Having albums around, having a dad that loved music.
Yeah.
And then also just being a latchkey child and watching MTV and listening to the radio all the time as a kid. It was just life. Music was life, is life, will be my life, even during a zombie apocalypse.
What was the first album that you were just absolutely obsessed with?
Oh, that's hard. One that I purchased by myself or one that was in my parents' record collection?
Both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both.
My parents' record collection, I absolutely loved Neil Young's debut record. And just we had that on all the time during dinner time. My parents would play it all the time. So that was like one of the first records and first voices that I really fell in love with.
Wow.
I also have a couple connections to Neil Young in that in my family of six, so I'm the youngest of four siblings, and then my two parents, I was the only blonde in my family, and I'm the only one with blue eyes in my family. So there's that Unknown Legend song from Neil Young, and my dad used to kind of sing that at me when I was a little kid, and so that's what made me feel special in a giant family where you're competing for your family's attention.
Her long blonde hair flying in the wind.
Mm-hmm. And there's also another Neil Young story that I like to tell where my parents went to go see Neil Young at Cheyenne Frontier Days in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and they were backstage to meet him after the concert. This is early 80s, and maybe 1980, and my parents were backstage, and the governor of Wyoming came up to my mom and started talking to my mom because he thought she was Neil Young's wife.
Peggy.
He thought that she was Peggy. So there was always the joke of Alicia is actually Neil Young's daughter, not yours. To my dad, Steve.
Not that many people say that Neil Young's first album is even in their like top 10.
Right.
I don't think he likes it.
I think it's true, but it's what you have around, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was very much an early foundational album for me.
Yeah.
And also the first record that I bought was kind of currency in the Sweeney house as well. Because again, youngest sibling in the house, I didn't have a cassette player. Mm. I had to go to my oldest brother's room. So De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising had come out, and Me, Myself, and I was on the radio. Mm. Everybody in our family would go nuts about that song. So we went to Kmart one day, and I had my birthday money, like my piggy bank, with me, and I barely had enough money to pay like $6 or whatever it was for the cassette tape, but I got that dang cassette tape. And then I was able to go in my brother's room and sit and listen to it when he said it was okay. And I remember just opening up the liner notes, reading the song lyrics, and just my mind was blown at this new sound to us. It was maybe our first or second rap album in the family. So those are foundational.
Are your siblings as into music as you?
No, not really. But I can say, like, I can look at each sibling and say, like, oh, my oldest brother, he liked hard rock music and also soft rock. Like, he liked Def Leppard. So I associate Def Leppard with my brother. With my sister, she liked rap. So I associate, like, Too Short with her. And then my brother Seth, he was really into discovering the bands that we didn't know and that were around in the 70s and 80s, like Joy Division and New Order and Talking Heads. So he was my go-to for those kind of things as we were discovering that music, like in the early 90s. Yeah.
So they all have some form of passion for music.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And then I was the wild one that just created a career out of it.
Yeah.
And a lot of it just happened to be like because I would just sit in my room and listen to music all the time. And I would read about music and subscribe to magazines. Yeah. And just, I just wanted to tell everybody about it. So, yeah.
Did you get the CMJ, you know, that came with a CD in it, and you just learn about all these bands?
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, I still have my collection of CMJ CDs that came in the magazine. I still have the magazines. And I also, a couple times over, when I was getting into college radio DJing, I was able to go out to New York and attend the CMJ Festival.
Yeah,
because they threw, kind of like in like a South by Southwest, CMJ was everything to us in college radio. Yeah. So we would fly out to New York and see concerts. So I was able to do that a few times. The one time that I was supposed to go to the CMJ Festival and wasn't able to was when 9/11 hit.
Yeah.
And we were actually supposed to fly out on September 11th, 2001 in the evening time. And I was hosting the radio show at Radio 1190 in Boulder at the University of Colorado. And I was on every day from 7 to 10. And I started getting phone calls from people. Our television wasn't working at the radio station at the time, because sometimes you could have the TV on in the background if you needed to. So I didn't know what was happening. And people were like, airplanes just hit the World Trade Center. And then another radio DJ that I was going to fly out to New York with showed up at the station at like 8:30 and was like, I don't think we're going to New York today and stuff. It was all very confusing, and people were calling me and requesting Anarchy songs and such. Yeah. And I just have that core memory and associate it with CMJ. Just you saying those three letters takes me back to 2001 and being a young kid, just getting into radio, and that huge life moment happening to us, because we can all remember where we were at the time.
Oh, yeah. And I remember I was working as a pizza delivery guy in Pittsburgh. I was in college at Pitt. Mm. And I remember, you know, all of the sort of jingoistic stuff that happened too, like the radio station kept playing Twisted Sister's "We're Not Gonna Take It."
Yeah.
And it was like, in that moment, you're like, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. People are calling up requesting Dead Kennedys it really was really, really wild and scary. Yeah. And like, I just remember like, I'm the journalist. I'm supposed to tell people what's happening. So I remember going on the radio and saying, reports are coming in of planes hitting the World Trade Center. That is all we know right now.
Wow.
And I'm trying to get online and go to CNN.com because, again, it's 2001 and you're trying to figure out what's happening. And I remember things weren't being updated quick enough on there. It was so scary. And I remember.
And how old were you? 19.
Yeah, 19. Just a young kid. And I remember my friend was a freshman at NYU. So I was trying to call her at the dorms and we couldn't get through and everything. And then eventually I remember later on in the day getting through and talking with her, but our phone conversations would get cut out and everything, like probably just however technology was working back then. But like, it was so chaotic. And she's just like, I can see ash out, you know, just looking outside of the, outside of her window at NYU. And, I remember right around that time, just cause we're talking music, that, Magnetic Fields 69 Love Songs record came out or was big right around then for my friend. So I remember she was listening to that while she was in the dorm room to sort of quiet her mind from just the how scary that was for her. And I remember I was listening to it back home here in Colorado in solidarity with my good friend that was there. Yeah.
So give me the Cliff's Notes of how you end up at 1190 from living in Nebraska.
Yeah. My parents, after they had all of us, when I was just a couple years old, they moved out of Nebraska. But my parents always wanted us to be near my grandparents. So my grandparents were business people, so they were longtime business folks in Nebraska, but then eventually they moved to Cheyenne, Wyoming. So one state over.
Yeah.
So then my parents moved to Cheyenne, and then it was still a little bit conservative for them. So eventually by fourth grade, we moved to Fort Collins, Colorado. And I've been a Coloradan ever since,
yeah.
with a few little stops like moving to London and hosting a radio show in London right after college. Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been a Coloradan ever since, and I feel so lucky to have found radio and musical storytelling in Colorado for so long, because I absolutely love it here, and I love our Colorado music scene. You know, people that are listening, they might be familiar that I am the president of Colorado music.
Yeah.
Or the queen of Colorado music. No, I'm just teasing around, but you know, it's something that I made it my own personal mission, and I've been able to make it as a part of my career to be a cheerleader or champion of Colorado music so much over the years.
Your voice is everywhere. I mean, it's on CPR.
Yeah.
If we're listening to the news, we hear you a lot as mm-hmm. well. I mean, you're as recognizable a voice as, you know, Kiefer or Ryan Werner, you know, or anybody around here.
And you're getting me at an interesting time, because I'm getting over this head cold that I've had since the beginning of June 2024 when we're taping this.
Okay, speaking of that, like, when did you develop your radio voice? Because you have a radio voice.
Do you think so?
Yes.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
So sometimes I reflect. So let's do timeline real quick, because you're like, hey, Alicia, being a little baby girl born in Nebraska to like, how'd you get to Colorado and eventually to CU Boulder? So graduated high school in Fort Collins, Colorado. I wanted to go out of state, but it just wasn't financially feasible for me. I got some great scholarships to go to the University of Colorado at Boulder, because I didn't want to go to college in my hometown. CSU is great, but it was my hometown.
Right.
So I went to CU Boulder. My very first week at CU Boulder, I discovered their college radio station.
Yeah, that's right.
As someone that lived on my floor in the dorms, she was already, like, she was from Arizona, and so she was already volunteering there, had heard about it before me, and she was like, hey, come hang out on my radio show, and you can choose a song. And I was like, yes! And I chose Joy Division's Atmosphere, which I often say, if I could... if I could put a song in a museum for people to gaze at forever, perhaps it would be that one. A very foundational song for me. But yeah, I started doing college radio at the University of Colorado Boulder. They were very lucky. Like, we were so lucky at CU Boulder, because the college radio station was not only just listened to on campus. It wasn't just like a secretive thing on campus. It was something that it was streaming across the world, which a lot of people were listening across the world. And people could also hear it in Denver. And I didn't realize, as you asked me about developing my radio voice and such, I didn't realize that people were listening to me on the radio. So I would just be hosting, and like we're doing now, just talking to you. Mm-hmm. And still to this day, I don't think about it. Like, I'm just sitting in the studio at Indy 102.3, Colorado Public Radio.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting in the studio, and then I'm like, I'm not thinking about the 85,000 people that are listening. I don't know how I developed my voice. I didn't actually appreciate my voice until about 15 years into my career. So I'm now 24 years into hosting radio, which is mind-blowing to me. But ever since I started in college in 2000, I've just been on the radio pretty much every day in Colorado since then, which is insane.
Is it easy to listen to your own voice now?
It is easier to listen to my own voice now.
Yeah.
I leave it on for my puppy. Nice. I'm in my dog mom era, so I like have her, you know, obviously I got to go into the studio and work, so I'll have my streaming device play Indy 102.3 so she can hear me on the radio.
That's awesome.
but it is easier to hear my voice now. It did take a while, and I didn't realize also that people were interested in me, because again, you don't think about who's on the other side. You're just like, I get to tell all these music stories. Yeah. So I would get on air and play the Ramones and then be like, when I was a teenager, I saw the Ramones Adios mm-hmm. Amigos tour at Ogden Theater and tell a story about that. And I'm not realizing that there were actually anybody else on the other end. And then like a year into hosting, I got the Westward Award for Denver's Best Radio DJ.
Hell yeah.
And I had no clue. And I was so confused because the radio station was starting to get a couple calls from Westward at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember my radio boss was like, oh, hey, can you take this phone call from Westward? They have a few questions for you. And I was like, sure. But they didn't tell me why they were calling. Yeah. They were just asking me a few questions about my morning show and stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, Artist of the Week. I do it every day at 8:42 and New Music Monday and things like that. And then all of a sudden, like, I start getting these phone calls like a couple weeks later, like, oh, you just got this Best Radio DJ in Denver Award. And for me, I was like, oh, people are actually listening to me on the radio. Right. Like, I didn't put it together because, again, I was just this young kid that was passionate about music. And that's probably what was the charm about me, too. Maybe for people listening in that were craving that underground radio feeling and everything. And I knew instantly that alternative radio or underground radio, college radio, that was my calling because music by the Pixies needs to be heard.
Yeah.
You know, playing Daniel Johnston needs to be heard. Yeah. Cat Power needs to be heard.
Have you ever been offered a job by like some mainstream station and you say, that's just not what I want to do?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've been courted a few times. Courted by a certain station in Denver that really liked me. It shall remain anonymous unless you ask me offline.
Yeah.
And I graciously said no.
Yeah.
I did go and visit it and meet some of the other hosts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought long and hard about it. And I thought to myself, this really isn't for me.
Yeah.
But again, because it's all about the music and everything. For me, it's telling the story of artists, independent artists, that that I think should be heard by everyone else.
Right.
So it just didn't seem
like a good
change or a good. It didn't seem right to do that.
Yeah.
And I have been also courted by some national radio stations as well. But then pandemic happened and those offers went away. But it was a very nice, heartwarming time.
Yeah.
I was very excited that couple places knew who I was.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that I was a celebrity to them. Again, it's like, I'm just sitting in a booth. I'm just, I'm just doting on and playing songs from the heart and everything. And I've gotten some very nice fan mail and some very nice offers over the years, but always have kept it in Colorado. I have thought about leaving a couple times.
Yeah.
But yeah, Colorado is my home, and I love what I'm able to do with the local scene as well.
Did you have any DJs or, you know, journalists that you were a fan of, it, you know, as a kid that you might have sent fan mail to even?
So digging into my brother Seth, who was into New Order and stuff, digging into his record collection, he had all these Peel Session records.
Yeah,
and I was like, what's this? I really like this thing called Peel Sessions.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, John Peel from BBC Radio 1. This is, so he became my idol and my hero. And I was able to, like in the early 2000s, some longtime Alicia radio listener had access to old archives of John Peel and
there's
everything.
There's a website now that just has every single one.
Yeah, the John Peel archives. Yeah. And so I was able to listen to his old shows and everything. So he was always a musical hero of mine. I always liked a couple WFMU radio hosts as well, including Irwin Chusid, who always was a big fan of outsider artists. So I loved him. I loved watching 120 Minutes on MTV.
Stuart Smalley era?
Matt Pinfield as well. I would keep, so I had a TV in my bedroom because, again, one year for Christmas, since there was four kids, my parents were just sick of us fighting over TV. They got us each a TV for Christmas one year. And throughout my whole life, and still to this day, I cannot fall asleep on a Sunday night. So I would always watch 120 minutes on Sunday nights, and I would lay in bed, and my room would be, you know, lights would be off, but I would have the TV on and I would have it set for 90 minutes because that's what the TV timer was. And I would stay up, and then I had a notebook by my bed, and I still have this notebook, and I would scrawl down band names and stuff. So when I would hear a song, that watch a music video of a song that I liked, I'd be like Stone Roses and write it down real quick and everything. And then so a lot of like MTV hosting was very foundational for me. And then I also loved locally here in Denver, we had Teletoons. And Heather Dalton, who is still around and works on the backside of things in public television, she was always a big hero of mine. And I can call her a friend now to this day, which very much warms my heart because I watched her host her like MTV style 120 minutes, but in Denver throughout the years when I was a kid as well. So I would watch that late at night on public access. Nice. Yeah.
Okay. So I ask everybody this incredibly stupid question of what five albums would you take to a remote Colorado cabin in the event of a zombie apocalypse, armed only with food, water, and a crank-powered Victrola. So... that's a mouthful. So would you give me like two of them?
Yeah, I'll give you two. How about David Bowie's Hunky Dory?
All right.
Okay, so just my relationship with David Bowie, and I'm sure you have it too. Like maybe you first discovered David Bowie because of Labyrinth when you were a kid, or you heard songs from David Bowie, but you didn't quite understand him.
Yeah.
So he's always been around in my life. My parents never really listened to him specifically. So he was kind of one of those artists that I found on my own. And at first, and I don't know about you, I know we're the same age-ish, but when did you find when you would buy CDs, like when you were a teenager, you would buy like a greatest hits album? Were you like that?
Sometimes because they were cheap. Like I remember this cassette that we got at the convenience store that was like Monsters of Rock. And that was like, wow, okay, cool.
I had that t-shirt.
Yeah.
From that tour. Yeah. But
you got the Changes One, Bowie?
Yeah. So I had that album for a really long time. And then eventually, as I just knew, like, oh, that's my person. Like after listening to that just 1,000 times, like eventually as I got a little bit into my older teens and I was able to afford buying full albums, I got the Hunky Dory record. I knew zero people who knew this album.
Yeah, right.
It was one of those things I found by myself.
It was yours.
And it was mine. There was no outside influence from any sibling, any friend, anything. And I was just like, oh my God, my mind is blown from like just Life on Mars is one of my favorite songs ever.
Yeah.
And I also collect bands covering Life on Mars. So I have like Flaming Lips covering Life on Mars on like a CDR that I got from somebody that was at a live show when they recorded it. And
have you heard the Fish one?
No, it's pretty good. I believe it. I believe you. Did you see Fish at Sphere, by the way, in Las Vegas?
I don't know if I would like to be in that crowd at that venue.
Yeah.
But we've been talking a lot recently about what would you like to see at Sphere. I'd like to see like maybe Tool or Radiohead or
Radiohead like came up with me too. We've been having this conversation also. It's like, who could pull that off?
Yeah.
I saw the Rolling Stones show here in Denver the other week, and I thought, okay, I could see the Stones pulling this off. They had a lot of like cutesy visuals and stuff like that during their concert. So I was like, I could see that at the Sphere. I could see them packing the house for like weekends for a whole entire month.
If only David Bowie was alive.
Yeah.
Or Prince.
Or Prince. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Prince, to get back to like the albums,
yeah.
Prince's Purple Rain almost made my list. Yeah. This week is the 40th anniversary of Purple Rain released. And that could easily be on my list. Also, the soundtrack to the movie Valley Girl could easily be on my list as well.
Okay.
That's foundational for me, actually. Just as much as like falling in love with like watching 120 Minutes and discovering music that way. When I was little, like before I even understood like sex scenes and movies or anything, I would just, Valley Girl was always on TV in the mid 80s, late 80s, early 90s. And I loved the music in it. The big song in that is Modern English's I Melt With You.
Yeah.
And just so many great 80s new wave songs in it. Like
is
that could
Frank Zappa's Valley Girl in the movie?
It's not in the movie.
Oh.
You would think so, but it's not in the movie. But that could easily have been on my list. I'm going to say a Yola Tango album.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Electro Pura. It's maybe not the best Yola Tango album, but it has a lot of heart for me personally, and it melts me every time I listen to it. And maybe one of the greatest love songs of all time is on that record. Just throwing that out there.
Is this your favorite band of all time? Because you were mentioning them before.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
I would go to the Sphere and see them.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else would, or I know people would, but I don't know if they could, you know, pack the house like a Radiohead. But again, that's another one of those bands that I discovered on my own, that I loved on my own.
Yeah.
And actually, when I had my very first radio shift, when I finally got my own radio show, after doing the training and being on my friend's radio show, I played Yola Tango's Big Day Coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then that always kind of became a thing for me. So then when I did my final radio show at Radio 1190, it was Big Day Coming. And I also wanted it to be when we launched Open Air, which is now Indie 1023.
Yeah.
I wanted that to be the first song that we played. But it was a group decision, so I didn't get to do it. But in my heart, it was Yola Tango's Big Day Coming.
Have you had a chance to interview them?
No.
No?
I met Georgia on the street here in Boulder before one of their Boulder Theater shows, probably in maybe 2014 or something like that. Every time they're selling their merch after a concert, I turn into like Charlie Brown trying to talk to the little redhead girl, and he can't like say anything.
Yeah.
He's just like, you know, just
Peppermint Patty, right?
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Just making it worse. So I've always been really awkward around them just at the merch table.
Yeah.
But I did see Georgia on the street, and she had a flip phone, and she was trying to take a picture of their name on the marquee.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw her across the street, and I was like, oh, Georgia, I love your music so much and everything, and was not going to ask for a picture, was not going to say anything. But just, I had that moment. They are on my list of who I would love to do a long form interview with, hasn't happened yet.
Have you read the book about them by Jesse Jarnow?
I haven't. I'm going to get that this week.
Yeah, I actually know him. He's a really good writer.
Oh.
I was going to ask you, is there anyone that you are still like capable of being starstruck by? And I guess it's yes.
Yeah, like totally Radiohead. Radiohead I would be starstruck by, but totally Yola Tango.
Yeah.
I met Bruce Springsteen and couldn't talk to him. And I was really surprised at myself.
Nothing came out?
Mm-mm. And he was like, you can talk to me. And I was like, mm-mm. Like, I literally, like, I shook my head at him. Like, we were in this sort of, like, it was when his autobiography came out, that big, giant autobiography book. And Tattered Cover in Denver was doing, like, a meet and greet with him. So you got, like, 90 seconds with him, and you got your photo taken with him. And as I'm walking up, I'd never met somebody that has this magical orb energy around them.
The regal. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, like, I felt it as I was walking up, and then all of a sudden I couldn't put words together. Totally Charlie Brown trying to talk to a little redhead girl. He was like, hey, what's your name? And I'm like, Alicia. And then...
you got that out.
Yep, and then he was like... you know, what's going on? You want to say anything to me? I'm like, mm-mm. Like, I just literally could not talk to him. And then he gave me a hug and put his arm around me, which he was very, you know, just like, he probably understands that he's this like special person and everything. And he was so kind to me and then took my picture and I went on my way. And it's not like I'm the hugest Springsteen fan or anything, but it was like, I really was for some reason just starstruck by his energy and presence that I didn't think I would be.
Yeah.
It would definitely happen with a lot of people. And also I've met so many people that I love too and have been sometimes a little bit let down by the experience. You probably had that too, right? Like maybe opening up for a band that you love or just interviewing someone that you totally like.
I interviewed, and I can say this, you know, because I don't really care, but I had a great interview with Sean Lennon. Awesome. I really liked him. And even though he's like 50, he seems like a kid.
Right. Because we think about him that way.
And his voice, too.
Yeah,
he just seems like a kid. And then I went and read his, like, you know, his Twitter. And I was like, wow, I don't really like this guy anymore. But I know what you're saying. It does happen in the music industry a lot where it's somebody, you know, you put on a pedestal and then you meet them and you're like, wow, they're not a good dude. They're not a good person.
They are not a good person.
Yeah. So... I have been in this situation that I'm going to ask you about.
Okay.
But, like, how do you feel doing so many interviews over the year and then, you know, being interviewed?
Oh, I don't like this. In fact, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not good. Like, I, just so you know, I will never listen to this.
You're cracking me up.
Like, I literally, in my head, I'm like, Alicia, you aren't saying anything interesting. Like, I feel like but it's true.
Yeah.
Again, because it's the, like, I do not like it.
Yeah.
And I did a podcast earlier this year, a fashion podcast, and...
Did you listen to it afterward?
No. But, like, at first I started it where she was kind of slow to open it up. Mm. I think she had fumbled my name. She said...
Oh, that's not a good way to start.
I know. And so I corrected it, and in my people pleaser, just trying to mom her back to make her be like, okay, yeah, you messed up my name, but it's totally fine.
Yeah.
I like started interviewing her, and then I was like, all right, Alicia, just step back and let her do this. So I feel very comfortable with you, and I'm so grateful that you asked me to talk about myself.
Of course.
But as an interviewer, I never talk about myself. Yeah. I actually remember I had a jerk one time, and I'll just say his name is Dick Valentine. So of course you're just a jerk.
Sounds
anyways,
like a jerk.
The lead singer of Electric Six. Do you remember that band?
Yeah.
So screw it. They're from Detroit. Yeah. Anyways, they had kind of a cool indie single in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
But anyways, I was interviewing him one time, and he had said something that resonated with me. So I followed it up with an anecdote from my life. And then he goes, whose interview is this? Yours or mine?
Wow.
And I was just like,
it's not like you were going on and on and on.
Way to put me in my place. All right. Thank you. But yes, I'm not used to being interviewed. So thank you for being interested in taking the time to do so. Truly.
Yeah. Let me tell an anecdote.
Okay.
Yeah, I won't go on and on and on. But I had Ryan Werner on the podcast, and I was asking him about this situation, and he really did just start interviewing me. And it was the one time on the podcast that I ever like really went on and on, and he was like, that's because I'm an interviewer and that's what's happening right now, you know.
Yeah, he's so good. He and I will talk about when you're asking me about my voice and how it's recognizable. He and I can both relate where we're at a restaurant and someone can hear us from a table nearby. Oh. And so they'll be trying to figure out how they know us and everything because we do sound so familiar. Yeah. Or a lot of times if I go and I order a coffee and I'm just interacting with the person and I'm, you know, I love to talk to people or anything. And so... then I'll pay, you know, with my credit card or whatever. And then they'll look at my name and they'll be like, I thought it was you and everything, but I wasn't sure and stuff. Yeah. So I get that a lot too.
You've interviewed so many bands, you know, and the first time I met you is because right after Gasoline Lollipops put out our first LP, we came and played.
That was so good.
It was really, really fun. I wanted to know, like, you don't have to say the bands, but, like, your best experience in those sessions and maybe your worst.
Yeah. I've had a best and worst with the same person, and I'll say who it is, and I love him, and I know it was an off day for him, but Father John Misty.
Yeah.
I love him so much. When his debut, and he had kind of this quick rise and everything. And we had been playing him just before it happened. Like we loved him in Fleet Foxes. Yeah. He put out Fear Fun and he did his first tour through Denver and we did an interview with him. Then he toured back and I met him after the show and made some jokes to him and we hit it off and I was just telling him how much I loved his music. Mm. And then he came back through town and... we did an interview with him live from Jesse Witten's couch. Like we wanted to do it at our studio at Colorado Public Radio, but it's on the far south end of Denver and he was playing at the Bluebird Theater.
Yeah.
And so and Jesse lived right by the Bluebird. So I did a live radio interview with him and it was so special. We were both sitting on this big floofy couch. It was being filmed and it was also being simulcast live on the radio, and it was him with an acoustic guitar, me sitting right next to him, and like him sitting next to me and singing Every Man Needs a Companion, like which I think is just an emotionally incredible, like deep song. Like just sitting next to him was just so special, and we had such a nice conversation, and I hold that in such high regard. And then the next tour around, we interview him again, and he came into the studio that time and was playing with his band, and he was super bummed that there was an audience. Hmm. Like, so everybody had finally discovered who Father John Misty was, like, a couple years into him and everything. But he had always, like, Sub Pop always sent him our way whenever he was coming through Denver. And then, like, that third interview he did with us, he wasn't unpleasant to me, but he was unpleasant about the situation where he came in.
People went downstairs to check it out.
Yeah. And it was like full, people are lurking and lingering. And it was just like not what he expected and everything. So that sort of like relationship and friendship that we were building with him over the years changed. And then he kind of stopped doing interviews with us. It probably wasn't because people were necessarily coming to that. But I think he really just pulled back on the interviews that he was doing really just as a musician on a tour and everything.
A lot of people do that. And that's, I don't know about in his case, but I'm sure you know that a lot of bands, once they see, the tour is sold out.
Yeah.
Then they're like, well, we're not doing any interviews.
Do
why
press?
Do we do that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interviewing the drummer for Pixies was such a charmed moment for me.
He's a magician, right?
He's a magician. Yeah, yeah, we talked about it. Oh, my dad was a magician too for a while to like help pay bills to raise four kids.
That's awesome.
So after, you know, the arcade and the record shop closed, he was doing a salesman job, but then also a magician as well. I loved talking with him. My ego isn't big enough to do it, but I would love to have somebody someday go through all the archives of my interviews and put together a little sizzle reel for me.
That would
be someone
amazing.
Says, that's a really good question, or
right.
Thank you so much, Alicia. Like or, hearing David
exactly.
Levering saying that, like
yeah.
I'm just like, I wish that my ego was big enough to do it, or I wish that I, you know, had the time to focus on doing that. I never will, but
yeah.
It would be a nice moment because I have had such a charmed, deep well of incredible artists throughout the years that I've been able to hang with. I'll mention Nathaniel Rateliff. Of course,
yeah.
We've had like such a long history of me being able to interview him. And
he's a great interview, too.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
And just a friendship. And right before Night Sweats was launching,
mm-hmm.
like he would always call me up on the phone or text me and be like, hey, I got this new... I got a new song. Can I bring it in and share it with you? I got this new band called The Night Sweats. Can I come debut the song with you on the radio? Like we would have those moments. And I remember when he came in before Night Sweats, the debut Night Sweats record came out. And he was doing a guest DJ with me. And he had scooched because he kind of would... When I have an interview, you sit kind of an L shape around from me. But he like scooched so he could be right next to me.
Aww.
And he was peeking at my notes and reading my notes and anticipating what I was going to say. And then that was kind of humorous to me.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of like he would say, oh, I liked this certain song by B.B. King or whatever.
Yeah.
So then I kind of had some notes on the year it came out. So then he would glance at that and then say that information during our interview. That was, I loved that. But yeah, so many wonderful, neat interviews over the years. Idols a couple years back, just because they're having such a moment now.
Yeah.
I do want to just give them a shout out. Like they were so cool. They were so fun. And I hope they still love doing interviews because they really made me feel like a star when I was doing their interview. And they seemed genuinely interested
yeah.
in like talking about their music and their politics and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just a few.
Do you ever find it hard to, I mean, you're such a part of the scene and I'm sure some of the reason why you know, it's hard to think of taking a job somewhere else is because
yeah.
you would have to build 20 some years of, you know, building all these friendships and knowledge of all the venues and everything. But do you ever have a hard time? I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but sometimes people contact me and I act a certain way or whatever, and it's hard to tell, does this person want to be your friend or do they want what you could possibly give them, like airplay or something like that?
Yeah. Yes. yeah. I think it's a little bit of both. Being a radio DJ, and especially being a radio DJ on the air since 2000, before people could really stalk you, and everything, like stalk you on the internet and such, and see pictures of you and everything. But you have a different relationship, like aside from musicians. So I'll first say, as far as listeners go, people will listen to you, and you're their friend. And I love being the friend of any listener, even if they're a stranger to me. But I love the relationship that they build with me. I love that they might get struck by something I say and they'll share it with somebody else. And so sometimes when I meet people in the public that are listeners, they'll feel a lot closer to me than I can understand.
Right.
So that happens. With musicians... musicians will come and seek me out and definitely find creative ways to get their music to me and everything, which I actually don't mind. It's part of my job. I want to listen to everything. The toughest for me is getting in a whole bunch of Instagram messages. That gets hard for me because I'm like, I want to remember that you have this new song out, but can you please just send it to me?
Oh, my God.
Because I have to keep that in my listening queue because I'm not going to remember to come back over to Instagram because I get so many messages all the time. And
Do you get these long messages? Because I'm like, my girlfriend is sick of me talking about this, but like I get messages every week that are this big on Instagram. And it's usually like, hey, my band has an album coming out this week and we have this show and can we be on your podcast? Could you write an article about it? And blah, 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 this big long thing. And I'm like, first of all, maybe lead with like, how are you or something like that. But 100%. Second, like sending that in an Instagram message is assuming that it's timely and then it's like not too long. And then also, I don't know if you get this either, but people who send you like a text that's that long, but then also includes like WAV files that you're going to like open it up on your iPhone.
Yeah. I'm not going to go to your Google Drive and look all that up. Yes. I get messages like that all the time. So I can totally relate. Yeah. And especially when it is that short period of time. And I know that they're just trying to figure press out, but it's like, you know, start a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Do the proper channels, do the proper homework to be like, hey, Adam, I like this about you.
Yeah. There you go.
And stuff like that. Yeah. Like, you know, during pandemic, just even with a family member, I had some changes in my life during pandemic. Mm. And I did not tell this family member that is like one of my, at one point in time, my favorite person in the world. But they didn't know about this huge change in my life because they never reached out to me. Mm. And when they reached out to me, it was only for them to talk about themselves. And they never asked me, how are you doing?
That's a big one.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I had to recently explain to this family member, like, hey, the reason you didn't know about this huge shift in my life was because you never asked me how I was doing. If you would have asked me, I would have opened up and told you about this thing in my life, but you never asked me how I was doing. So it can go, how are you, to just get back to that, how are you can go a really long way.
Especially if sometimes that's the only reason that you're reaching out. That's literally it. It's just like, I really like your stuff. How are you doing? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I've seen it all. I will say that.
Yeah.
I've seen it all through a lot of different channels. But sometimes I do think people use me. People super respect me also, but I do think that I have been used in the past or taken advantage of in the past due to my contacts and also due to, due to my contacts. We'll just leave it at that. Yeah, for sure.
I've kind of turned it around in a passive aggressive way, I have to admit.
Yeah. Good for you.
Because there are people who just send me a flyer for their show, like an instant, like a, not instant, like a, an image of a flyer.
I know. Tell me about
it. They text it to me and that's all they send. So I've started writing back. How's it going?
Yeah. Yeah. How is it going? Maybe you have this show coming up.
Yeah.
Like, do you want me to talk about it? Are you inviting me to it?
Yeah.
And I think you know this about me just because you've always been so good because you do promotions, like you would do promotions for Gasoline Lollipops and stuff. I get so many freaking emails and I do 2.5 jobs at the radio station that I'm so bad at email and I hate it. And oftentimes I'll like feel bad because I'm like, I read it. It's in my queue of my brain. But if I read it at 9:30 at night when I'm not sitting at my desk, I'm like, oh, Adam wrote me.
Yeah.
Cool. But if I read it at night when I'm not sitting at my desk at work, then I forget it and everything. Yeah. Like emails are hard for me to keep up with. I know that's a whole different thing, but emails is a very big part of how people send their music to me. And
we should give anybody who listens to this episode who is in a band who wants to be on the radio or wants to be in, you know, the papers I write for on the podcast. Personally, the tips that I have are, it's got to be timely. Mm-hmm. Like if you have a record that's coming out, I want to know about it literally 2 months before it comes out. Or if there's a show that you want me to write about, 2 months. Secondly, make the emails as short as you fucking can. Yeah. And have everything there in the email. Don't make me ask, can I listen to it somewhere? Like, so those are my tips.
Yeah, right, absolutely. There. And I've sort of streamlined that because I've been doing it for so long that on the Indie 1023 website, it's like the submit your music.
That's good.
Link. And it's like, what's your name? Where do you live? What's your email address? What are your top 1 to 3 songs that you want me to listen to? Yeah. Attach those here. Give me a little bio about your band. And when does it come out? What's your record label? You know, those sort of things. Because if you have to do the fishing and everything, it makes it less fun to listen to.
Yeah. Well, even if you're, you know, fishing through a 1,000-word email, that should basically be like, this is when my show is.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, okay. Albums 3 and 4.
Okay, albums 3 and 4. Oh my gosh. There's a band out of Scotland called Young Fathers.
Young Fathers.
Are you familiar with them? Okay.
So they're
a Scottish hip-hop group. And a lot of times when people ask me, Alicia, what's your favorite band? That's an open-ended question. Like, from when I was 20 years old or 30 years old, like, you know. But I often say Young Fathers. I just love them so much. And they have an album called, from 2015. They just put out an incredible record in 2023 as well. And they've won the Mercury Prize in Music a few different times.
What kind of music is this?
It's like hip hop. It's tribal. It's folk music. The album that I love in particular, although I love all of their albums, it's like picking a favorite child, but they have an album from 2015, White Men Are Black Men Too. If you want to look up one single from it, Shame is like a song that I love dancing to. Like, I would love to have this if there was a zombie apocalypse. I'd put this mother trucker on and I would just dance to the whole album. But this band just taps into something that it just takes over my body. It's like voodoo in my blood. Yeah. Like, it just like takes me over. I don't know why, but the moment I heard them, it was again another one of those discoveries that I got to bring to the radio. And I love them so much.
Have you interviewed them?
I did just interview them in November.
Nice.
At Ball Arena. They opened up for Depeche Mode.
Oh, wow.
So Depeche Mode brought them on tour. They're like everybody's favorite. They're all the musicians' favorite band sort of thing. Yeah. Like all the most famous British musicians and stuff like that. Like, they love Young Fathers.
Have you been to Scotland?
I've been to Scotland.
Have you seen them play in Scotland?
No.
That would be cool.
There's a show happening in Ireland. They're opening up. They're playing at a castle with LCD sound system. Whoa. And like Florence and the Machine, I think, is there. And it's happening like this weekend. I was like, oh man, I wish I could go to that.
Incredible.
But I would love to see them in Scotland. I've seen them at the Larimer Lounge was the first time I saw them. And they always come through Colorado in the wintertime, so they've always been snowy shows, which deterred them from, I think, coming back. They just played Coachella back in April, and I don't think they didn't book Colorado. I was hoping they would come back through Colorado for, like, a victory lap, but they did open up for Depeche Mode. But
so
love them for album 3.
Young Fathers.
Yeah. Or 4? That was 3, yes. Right? Yeah.
Yes. 3. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've said Yola Tango, David Bowie,
Hunky-dory.
Young Fathers.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to bring my girl Jenny Lewis into the mix.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Jenny Lewis all day, every day, Troop Beverly Hills as a child actress.
I didn't know that.
Did you not know she was a child actress?
No.
Oh, my God. Did you ever see Troop Beverly Hills?
Yes.
You had to.
Oh, totally.
She was Shelley Long's daughter.
Wow.
In the movie. So she was also in The Wizard with Fred Savage. Remember the one with the Nintendo, the movie with the Nintendo glove?
Time.
Of course you saw that.
Yeah.
Jenny Lewis was a child actress, but then, you know, had her band Rilo Kiley in the late 90s through the 2000s. And there, the Rilo Kiley record that I love all of the Rilo Kiley records. I love every single Jenny Lewis solo album. Again, she's just like the big sister that I, you know, I wish I knew. Again, another musician that I haven't interviewed, but we would be BFFs.
Sounds like you need to.
I have a feeling we'd be BFFs. But the Under the Blacklight record from them, I think it's like 2007, is another beautiful record. And I love every song on that album, but I could get down with one called Silver Lining, where it's kind of a breakup song where it's like, you know, like basically you were the silver lining, but now I'm gold, like, you know. So that just when that lyric, whether, you know, whether I was going through that or not, I just felt that in that song. Yeah. And so that one like lives rent free in my head. But a little bit more eloquent. But again, talking about myself makes me all shucksy and hard to do. But I mean, T-Rex. I love T-Rex. I love Brian Eno. I love Pixies. I love Modest Mouse. You know, there's so many artists that I love. But it's hard to choose the top five. But I thought, you know, I gotta bring my girl Jenny Lewis in A Zombie Apocalypse. And like, that album has like a song called Money Maker on it that's like really tough and cool. And just it's a great album.
I saw her at the very missed Monolith Festival.
I remember
which
that
was
festival.
The shit.
It was the shit.
I wish that was still going on.
Yeah, remember it was like at Red Rocks. Did you see the Red Rocks ones?
Oh, yeah.
Like when Monolith was at Red Rocks?
Yeah, there was a stage down in the like the museum, but then she played on the side stage that was like in the rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great festival.
I was working that festival, and when it was like Spoon and Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah.
Oh, that's not the year I went to.
Yeah, I think that summer was summer of 2007. I think she was there 2006. I think it was.
No, I think I saw her there. Or was it after 2009 when they had Phoenix and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs?
Oh yeah.
And Tao and the Get Down Stay Down.
Love Tao so
all
much.
All that stuff. Yeah.
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 Just yeah, such Monolith was such a great festival. Yeah. What a gift to our community.
Well,
I,
so
I
was
love
Riot
everybody.
Fest. I missed that a lot.
Right. Riot Fest was so good.
Yeah.
Did you do Riot Fest when it was out in the sticks or out?
No, the first year, like when the Stooges played, that was like on a farm.
Yeah, somewhere. The farm one, yeah.
I saw it at in the parking lot of Mile High Stadium.
That's which one I was with the Cure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
That's which one I was at.
And then I saw it at the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was great.
That one was great, too.
Well, I'm glad that you picked a woman as well, because I always say, like, how could anybody just not have a woman's... Because it might be forever. This might be it for you, the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
So you might go without ever hearing a woman's voice ever again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
I also considered like just being really snarky for these responses and being like, well, my mixtapes that I used to make to then bring to clubs to DJ, I would just
bring those
the zombie apocalypse. Yeah. Or
that counts.
Also, like I was thinking about it, like maybe I need to learn how to play an instrument. So would I do like a John Coltrane record or maybe Keith Jarrett's Colm concert, which I absolutely love, so that I can tickle the old ivory and learn how to play piano during a zombie apocalypse and bring all them zombies to the yard. I don't know.
Right. I've had so many interesting answers.
Yeah.
Like the only person I've been really strict with on the format of it is myself. When Clay came on and interviewed me, I was like, I'm going to follow all these rules. But Munley from Slim Sessions Auto Club, he sat down, and in the middle of the interview, I said, okay, so there's this question about this apocalypse. And he looked at me and he said, this is never going to happen. I'm not going to answer this because it's not going to happen. And then he said, what if I name five items that I would bring? And then he said, you know, like a pencil and my guitar and all these things.
Munley. No. That is such a Munley answer.
Yeah.
That's actually an interview where people that were listening to me interview him called me up during my interview while his songs were playing to say, Alicia, I'm sorry. But I didn't feel like it was a bad, like, I didn't feel like him and I had a bad rapport.
Right.
But it's hard to get him to answer questions. That's just who he is. And so this is like 2001, probably, when he had maybe released the Lee Lewis Harlots, like Munley and the Lee Lewis Harlots, like debut record or whatever. And I remember interviewing him live on the college radio station in Boulder during my morning show. And yeah, he was just giving one word answers. And me being like a teenaged kid, I'm trying to like just bop along. And you know, I'm so sunshiny and everything, that listeners were feeling bad for me, but I didn't feel bad for myself. And what was interesting is maybe three years later, I ran into Munley on the street, and he was like, oh, I was just thinking about you the other day, Alicia. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he's like, I thought that interview we did was really good. I was like, oh, thank you. Like, just
when you
doing
sit
a call
down
back to that.
Like across from him and he's looking you right in the eyes, like, he's so kind and he's so loving and he's so, like, some of the things that he says when you're really with him like this are funny.
Yeah.
And I think when you see them in writing or you listen to it, you might be like, God, this guy is like horrible. But no, he's a wonderful person. I think he's amazing.
And like he runs also. Like, that's something that might be surprising to someone as well.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, he exercises and stays active and everything and loves animals. And yeah, just what a neat person. I do love him. And he has a song from his like Jay Munley years, like early on, called My Arizung, that I absolutely love and would recommend anybody to look
up
and listen to.
Yeah. What's it been like over the years to, you know, cultivate what to me seem like these amazing friendships that you have working at it was Open Air and now it's 102.3.
It's not lost on me how lucky I am to know so many cool people, both local musicians and national musicians as well, international musicians too. I'm so close to it, so it's hard to think about, but it is like when you're, you know, when you're good friends with somebody that's in a locally famous band and then you get invited to their wedding and then you're just like, oh my God, all the most talented people I know are in this same room. Like, that's pretty insane. Or, you know, you're, you know, at a cabin hanging out with, you know, one of your favorite singers or songwriters, you know, up in the mountains and you're like, whoa, we're like sleeping in the same place or whatever, partying with them when you're at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
I don't know, except for that it's just something that has just always been part of me. I don't know. I've been in it for so long that now that you're interviewing me about it, I don't know.
Yeah. Is it tough when, you know, some of these amazing ladies who might have been there when you started, when Open Air started, like when they start leaving?
Yeah, good question. It's hard. My Powerpuff Girl sisters, if anybody follows me on Instagram, you'll notice like sometimes in my stories, if I'm ever with Jesse Witten, who's still on the air with me, but she doesn't work full time at Open Air anymore, or Bruce Trujillo as well. We like looked in a mirror one day and we're like, oh my God, we're the Powerpuff Girls. Mm-hmm. We've got blonde hair, we've got black hair, we've got the red hair representation. And we really had a good thing going as far as just our love and passion for radio, public radio in particular, our love and passion for music and bringing that to community and creating and cultivating community. Like, we were all just aligned with that. So we just had the greatest time working together.
Yeah.
We still get together and hang out. But I do miss working with them on the regular. I'm so proud of how they've grown their careers. They're a few years younger than me.
Yeah.
So as much as, like, I remember when Bruce started with us, she asked me to be her mentor. But now I feel like at times she could maybe mentor me.
She's amazing.
She is amazing. Yeah. And I'm so proud of she's creating this, you know, venue called Manos Sagrados in Aurora. She's been working on getting this open, and our community just needs this venue that is, you know, programmed by a Latina woman. We just don't have that kind of venue in Colorado. Or, you know, I don't know any, you know, there maybe is somewhere in the States, but I don't know. But she's doing great work, and I miss working with them on the radio, and I know they love doing radio too. That's why we'll always forever be bonded. And hopefully one of these days we'll be able to get back together. We hosted a podcast. You can still hear it on Spotify and stuff, called The Playlist League. We used to host a podcast.
Oh, yeah, I listened to that. I remember that. Yeah.
We always talk about maybe bringing it back or something else.
Yeah. No, that was great. I remember listening to that.
Yeah. But we're all three definitely aligned on how much we love our creative community in Colorado, and just what a great opportunity we had to help be a voice of that and bring that together.
Yeah,
I miss them.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is, for me, I think, although I don't know if this is true, like, if I wasn't a journalist and I didn't play music, I think I would quit social media entirely. Although, like, you know, that might be a pretty pretentious thing to say, because I don't know if I would actually do that. But, like, how do you so successfully, unlike me, like, you are on social media, you know, but you share yourself, but, like, not your private life.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like I could do way more. Like, I definitely, like, future thinking, because I have so much musical knowledge, I wanna dip more into making videos and everything. Like, you know, I do have videos occasionally on there, but I have so many ideas of my vast musical knowledge that maybe I'm not able to share on the radio, or maybe you might not hear me say on the radio, that I wanna bring to social media. But I kind of early on, and maybe it was because I was hosting on the radio and before Instagram and Facebook and everything were really a thing, just early on I had made kind of a commitment to myself to keep my private life private. So it's like, is Alicia married? Is Alicia queer? What is Alicia? And it's like, I just keep that part of my life quiet, and always did, just out of respect for whomever is in my life. But I love connecting and always making everything about music. I also worked in music television as well in my early 20s, so kind of like an MTV style station. And I wrote for TV and everything, and I always am just on, and everything I do, it has to be has to do with music, or I make every, you know, music is just in me. So every time I make a post to connect, I can easily just connect it with music. And I think that's what people would like from me. Do you think I should be sharing more about my private life?
No, I kind of wish that I wasn't so quick to share mine, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there are some days, and I'll start making posts. Like, I will start a post or and want to post something. And then I'm like, I take a moment and I think, like, does this add value? And I'm like, oh, you know, I would like to share this, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Or even when it's like,
I wish a lot of other people might do that.
Yeah. Or it's like, share the last... Or in stories where it's like...
Oh, the question.
Thing, and everybody's like, share your last whatever, or and stuff. And it's like, share the last picture in your photos, no cheating. Yeah. And then so I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then I like opened it up, and then it was a picture that I had of myself that I had sent to someone, not like a nudie picture or anything. Although, use your imagination. Yeah, just kidding. Yeah. But it was like a picture of myself. So like a selfie. And I was like, I love this picture of me, but I'm actually not going to post it and share it, because I took it in the moment to send to a person to say, I'm coming back home.
Yeah,
you know, where I mentioned at the beginning of our chat that, you know, I've been a little sick. I traveled to Italy at the beginning of June this month, and I had been saving up for a long time to do this trip. Then I got sick 3 days into the trip, but it was still awesome. So anyways, and then right as I got back from Italy and I'm jet lagged, then I had to get on a plane again and go to San Diego, and I was still feeling sick, and I still am. But this picture that I took of myself, and I don't know why I keep talking about it, but anyways, I loved this photo of me.
Yeah.
I started to share it online, and then I always think like, oh, what song can I add to it? Because, you know, you make your Instagram stories a little bit more dynamic with a song, or at least that's just who I am. And then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to share that photo to everybody, because it was like no cheating. So I was like, I'm not going to, you know what? I'm just not going to send it. Because the person that I sent it to knew I was coming, like that was why I sent it, and it doesn't need to be shared. And I actually then just deleted the photo from my phone as well.
Oh.
Because I was like, this person got this photo.
I'm sure a lot of people cheated.
Yeah.
So.
You know. I know, right? And I'm like so like hardcore that I'm like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
It's so silly.
I'm pretty, I don't know if sensitive is even enough of a word, but I actually have voiced that I don't like receiving a photo that I thought was just for me, and then seeing it on somebody's social media, I'm like, oh, I thought that was for me. You know?
Yeah.
So that was nice that you thought that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very much that person. Yeah. I'm also very much a person that loves music and loves talking about music. And I hope people have made it this far in the episode as well, because I do love music so much. And I don't talk about myself a lot because I do relate everything to music when I am sharing myself online. So this has been a nice conversation too.
Okay, album number 5, fifth and final choice.
Okay, I realize I have to say this because I've like said their name like 3 times during our talk, but and this again isn't my favorite album from the band, but it's a really long album, so I would have a lot of music to choose from. New Order, their Substance record, which it was like a double album.
Yeah.
Song number 3 on disc 1 is always what I would start it at. It is the song Temptation. It was always just a song that I loved so much from the band. And I would always start when I would get in my car as a teenager in the 90s or whatever. But like in this album came out in the 80s. But when the album came to me, I would always start the album with Temptation because I loved that version in particular of Temptation. It's another one of those songs where I collect versions of it and everything, and it's always been super special to me.
Yeah.
So New Order. I love Power, Corruption, and Lies better as a New Order record if I had to like tell somebody. Mm. But for me, you know what? Zombie Apocalypse style, bring me that Substance record because it's really long.
Yeah. Well, I chose Santanista by The Clash because it's
a long record too.
36 tracks.
Yeah.
So
I remember buying that one in high school
and
listening to it in my friend Slugbug. Yeah, she would drive around town and I would DJ. That and Pixies' Doolittle record, which could easily be on this list and could easily be one of the greatest albums of all time.
Yeah.
But it didn't make the top 5 because, again, it's hard to choose a top 5.
What concerts are you excited about this summer and fall?
Well, tonight, I'm not going to it because I've been sick, but Adrian Lenker
at
Mission Ballroom. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen her. What a beautiful solo album she put out. She's also in the band Big Thief.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to, of course, the Underground Music Showcase, which is Denver's summertime music festival, the final weekend in July. looking forward to the UMS every year. TK Maidza is on the list to play, and she's an Australian musician. And linking it back to the Pixies, she caught my ear originally a couple years back because she covered Where Is My Mind, which I don't think you need to cover that song ever, but she actually did a great job of that because the original version, it's a perfect song. Yeah. Other shows I'm looking forward to this summer, Kurt Vile at Levitt Pavilion.
I should go to that.
You should. Yeah. Levitt Pavilion is such a cool gift to our community. They host free shows, also ticketed shows as well.
But and Jesse Witten's working there,
Jesse Witten, my Powerpuff girl, my sister in radio, she works there. And they do such great, exciting work bringing a variety of artists to play free shows for the Colorado community.
Yeah.
And I just love, I like bring my teeny tiny little short chair, bring some snacks, and because you can pack a picnic and just watch live music. Yeah. Love it. Oh my gosh, what else is coming up? So many shows. Can't believe you've asked me it and didn't tell me to make a short list before I got here. I'm scrolling through my calendar. There's Pixies, Modest Mouse, Cat Power this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Also coming up soon. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I didn't go to, because I've been sick, I wanted to go to Chicano Batman last night. I couldn't go to that. They have a great new album out as well. Dr. Dog and Fruit Bats.
Yeah.
Coming up at Red Rocks.
They just announced an extra show they're going to play. Is it the Gothic? Or the Ogden.
Maybe, I'm not sure. One of those two. And I love, like, Dr. Dog, they retired from playing live. I love that they're back. Fruit Bats, Eric from that band, he's become a friend of mine over the years. Yeah. I had a great interview with him. And digital friend. I can't say that I hang out with him whenever he comes through Denver or anything. But we're online friends with each other.
You stay connected.
Mm-hmm. And he and I, like, I was hosting or moderating a panel that he was on, and we just hit it off really well. It was something for NPR music. Yeah, so those are a couple of the shows that I'm looking forward to coming up. Just a lot happening. Can I give you my top five? I'm going to run through a top five of Colorado albums.
Yeah.
I scrawled this down really quick. These are foundational Colorado records for me. I'm going to say Slim Cessna's Auto Club, Always Say Please and Thank You. Dressy Bessie, Pink Hearts, Yellow Moons.
I love them.
They're
great people, too.
They're great people. And Dressy Bessie adjacent, I have to mention the Apples in Stereo because they're huge for me. The new Magnetic Wonder record is awesome, but any album of theirs is incredible as well. Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, that self-titled record from 2015, just that changed everything, right? Like, that was, in his solo records and the Wheel records and stuff like that, Born in the Flood, I love all of that older stuff. I used to see it in concert in a room this size, you know, that we're in right now. But that Night Sweats record, that was huge. And another one from is The Czars, Ugly People versus the Beautiful People.
I don't know this record.
So there's a musician, you might know John Grant. You might recognize his name. John Grant was the lead singer of the band called The Czars. Also, Jux County was another band that members of The Czars were in. The drummer of The Czars, he's in Keith Urban's band, travels around and is plays in Keith Urban's band nowadays. I'm so proud of him, Jeff Lintonmeyer, that he's just a working musician because he's such a good dude. But The Czars, Slim Cessna's Auto Club, Dressy Bessie, all of those bands, when I was starting out in college radio, that's really what got me excited about the Colorado music community and really how I got on a path of, oh my gosh, I need to be a storyteller for these people because this music is so good. Anywhere you go in the country, when you talk about local music, people just say, oh yeah, the bar band that does the covers and stuff like that. You know, these bands just shattered that notion that like that people would talk about. So those are huge for me. I had a special moment. The Czars actually thank me on this Ugly People versus the Beautiful People record. So if you ever see the album in Twist and Shout or anywhere, look in the liner notes. They thank me in that. And I had a chance to see them play because they were huge in the UK. They were on Bella Union Records, which Simon Raymond, just, you know, this Britpop legend, he from Cocteau Twins, he loved the Czars so much that he signed them to his label. And anyways, when I lived in London and for a short period of time and was a radio DJ out there, the Czars toured through London and put me on the list to see their show. And it just felt really special. Aww. And I always love when it's a band that is near and dear to my heart and a band that I know, I love watching people watch them. Yeah. So I love people's, Yeah, just seeing my favorite bands or taking people to Red Rocks for the first time. Yeah. Like, I love those kind of moments. Like, they're just so special for me.
Well, they always say that, like, when you turn 30, you stop discovering new music.
Yeah.
So for me and you, I mean, we're barely over 30.
Yeah.
But we get to, you know, not only, you know, continually discover new music because it's sent to us every day, but yeah. also we get to share it with everybody,
yeah.
which feels really cool.
Feels so
really
cool.
Great. Yeah.
My favorite local album out this year, by the way, American Cultures, Hey Brother, It's Been a While. New album out now. Chris Adolf is the guy behind this. He has his old band is called Bedweather California. He also had previous projects before that were some of my favorite Denver bands, but the American Culture album that they just put out is just a chef's kiss. If I were to describe it in an emoji, it would be a chef's kiss emoji.
I'll be checking that out for sure.
It's so good. Yeah. So much music to talk about. And I discover something new every day. I do not rely on all these foundational albums of my youth. I definitely wanted to name drop them and mention a lot of them during our conversation. But my next album is always the album that I haven't heard yet and stuff.
Yeah.
My favorite album is always the one that I haven't listened to.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. You are definitely someone I admire a lot and have learned interviewing from as well. I was going to ask you, you know, this question about, like, how has Denver changed in the last 20 years? But I think we need another hour.
Yep, we'll go to episode 2 for that one. Yeah. We could do a whole history on just, like, venues that have changed, how Denver has changed, how the music scene has changed.
How Rhino has changed.
How Rhino has changed.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
I'll keep it. I'll come back and definitely... Happy to do that anytime.
Thank you so much for hanging out.
Thank you.
I'll give you another hour, then I gotta run. I gotta fly away. Leave you to fall.
That was Alicia Sweeney of Indie 102.3 and me talking music and music journalism and a lot more. She's really great, and so is Indie 102.3. which you can listen to online, or if you live around here in your car or your transistor radio, whatever you got. I hope that Alicia actually does listen to that. And I hope that you leave a review of My Life Stash on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to stuff. It really does help. I hope to see you at the Boulder Roots Music Project on Monday, July 8th for my free 7 p.m. talk on DIY music business. And I also hope that you get in touch via mylifestash@gmail.com, with any concerns or comments or questions or suggestions for guests or, you know, improvements by the host or therapy advice, you know, whatever you got. Anyway, I will see you once again next month.
Transcend day and night. Yes, I'm old fashioned. I just don't share your passion for ever changing eternal twilight. Go on and give oblivion a shot.